So are we on this camera or this camera? Right there, okay.
We're right here.
All right.
Jason, do you see that camera?
Are you ready, Wheeler?
If you're watching us right now, forgive Whiteley for being a little bewildered. He just woke up not long ago after going to bed last night at 8 p.m.
We had a
How old are you now?
We had a big podcast production day yesterday for our Yalitix primary voter guide.
Oh, yeah, I was there.
And as usual.
And I went to bed at 1 a.m.
As usual,
he's
though.
He's got to get his beauty sleep.
I picked up
he
all
does
the work
need
on
it.
This. I picked up all the work once again.
Oh,
on this
you
episode.
Picked up all the work. I
so
see.
So you come rolling in. You had your, you know, your I town car picked you up this morning. You have two drinks here.
I think the way that it usually works out is you don't pick up all the work. You're very good at picking up all the credit. Is that what you meant to say?
That's why you're known as the other Jason.
Yeah, that is correct.
So
actually,
we are at Community Beer Company in Dallas. We love this place. Not only their beer menu, but we also love the food here too.
And every time we come here, I keep saying, why didn't we do this one out? Side on the, I mean, they've got this incredible huge patio outdoors. It's one of the absolute best ones in North Texas. And it's a beautiful day today, but here we are inside because we're just creatures of habit, I guess. And yeah, maybe we are getting older and going to bed at 8 p.m. and, you know, just always sitting at the same table. We're at the same table we're always at.
I left Luby's at 5, so I had plenty of time to get home.
Yeah.
Watch Murder, She Wrote, and then I was in bed.
I hope
so
you didn't
fine.
Fill up too much, though, and saved some room because what do we always get when we come here?
The jackfruit sandwich.
Jackfruit barbecue sandwich.
It looks like pulled pork that you would get anywhere in the South, but this is jackfruit. It's unbelievable.
You could serve this to people and tell them it's pork and they would believe it if they didn't know better.
It's good stuff.
So speaking of good stuff, though, and I hate segues like that.
That was smooth.
This
Wheeler.
Really is, though. this is because...
He's trying to justify.
I haven't
He's
seen
trying to justify the corny segue. Jason,
because at first it's Cole Sullivan. Y'all should meet because the last time Cole was on the podcast with us, you stood us up, Jason.
It was a dental emergency is what we were told.
Yeah. He uses that one often. Yeah.
I just pull it out. You saw Hangover, right? You saw the Hangover? The flat tire doesn't work as well anymore. So we
got Cole Sullivan with us.
Our friend from WFAA, Cole Sullivan, is here.
And he has
doing some tremendous work.
Yeah, he's dropped a story that I just haven't seen anywhere else. And this is a really big deal. And it's all over Texas. And I'm really surprised that we haven't seen more on this. Although by the time this is released a few days from now, you know, you sitting at home will probably be like, I've seen that. And it's because people are going to pick it up off of what you've done.
So, yeah, let's lay it out for our viewers and listeners who may not be following this. But, you know, the Texas Education Agency is the overseer, the regulator for school districts across the state. And lately, Fort Worth, Houston, they've been taking over districts because those districts have had a handful of failing campuses.
And nothing strikes fear at a school district more than to hear those two words,
sure.
State takeover. And they can do it, if you're not familiar with this here in Texas, they can do it if just one school in an entire district, you can have a district the size of Houston, the biggest district in the state, and one school, if it receives a failing accountability grade 5 years in a row, the state can swoop in and take over, and it's open-ended.
The entire district, not just that school, but the entire district.
The whole district.
And that's what's happening.
They can replace the superintendent. They can replace
the board.
They can come in and say, you know, from now on, it's our rules, and we're going to do it our way here. And so ISDs across the state are terrified of those two words, state takeover.
And you found out something, Cole, here, that there are a number of smaller school districts that are doing something with these struggling campuses, but still maintaining control.
Something very unusual, Jason. They're outsourcing some of their failing schools. So they're taking the schools that have 3 or 4 years of failing accountability scores from the TEA.
So they haven't hit that 5-year mark.
So they haven't hit the 5-year mark, but they're staring it down. And they say, instead of us, our ISD, running this school, we're going to pay millions for a third party to come in and take over this campus.
Because it keeps the state from coming in and taking over and basically jettisoning the leadership there at the ISD.
So yes. They're saving their own jobs, I guess, huh?
Correct.
That's part of the benefit they see it as. They say there's not a state takeover. They get to keep the superintendent and the board get to keep their jobs.
And so they have some limited control?
So they still have the building and they still have, there's still students who are enrolled in the district, but the third party brings in their own teachers, they bring in their own curriculum, they change the length of the school day in some cases, they extend the school year in some cases. So they make dramatic changes within the school.
But the benefit to the district is that, like you said, they get to keep their jobs and their administration, and basically they can still oversee all the other schools in the district. It's just that one school that the outsourcing company comes into and takes over.
Exactly. And in exchange for outsourcing, the TEA gives them a 2-year reprieve from state takeover.
Okay.
So the clock stops on the accountability measurement, and they get a 2-year break from those two words they're so scared of, state takeover.
But this costs a lot of money.
Yes, millions of dollars.
You had done a piece on this, and you spoke with the folks in Wichita Falls, and they did this at a school there. And I was looking at the cost on that, and it was one school. They decided to sign a 3-year contract with an outside vendor to come in and let it out. And they were going to pay them $375,000 per month.
Yes.
So yeah, that's a lot of money.
It adds up to millions of dollars a year. Wichita Falls did this with one of their middle schools. They have since signed a contract for two elementary schools at roughly the same rate. So they're putting more than $1 million a month to a third-party operator so that they can avoid this TEA takeover.
Hmm. Let's talk about the third-party operator, because that's what's fascinating here, too, is this company. For the 6 or 7 districts, or 5, I think you reported on that.
Yeah, it's a little over half a dozen districts so far.
So far. They're all using the same?
Not all using the same, but there's one that has kind of risen to the top in this landscape.
And it's from Colorado.
It's a Colorado-based nonprofit called Third Future Schools, but it's got Texas ties.
Yeah,
tell
us
about those, because a lot of folks will likely know this name.
So the founder and former CEO of Third Future Schools is former Dallas ISD superintendent, current Houston ISD superintendent, Mike Miles.
So important to note here that Mike Miles was the one who the TEA tapped to go in and take over for the state, to take over Houston schools. Used to be, as you said, at Dallas ISD. When he left Dallas ISD years ago, that's when he went and created this nonprofit. Mm-hmm. It's called Third Future Schools. And how does this work? So Third Future Schools has become the dominant player mm-hmm. in this market, hasn't it? I mean, and of course, you know, it was founded by a guy who has some very strong ties and high up connections here in Texas.
And to the TEA specifically, yeah, it's become the dominant player. Many schools that are right now looking to partner with what's called a turnaround operator put out a request for proposals for someone to come in so they can outsource the school to them. They find that they only have one company, one group coming in to offer their services. It's Third Future Schools. There's not a lot of competition out there for this right now.
And for clarity, when Mike Miles was tapped by the TEA Commissioner Mike Morath to take over Houston, do that turnaround, which is still underway here, he resigned as CEO of Third Future, but he's still on the payroll as a consultant, you found out, right?
Yeah, records we got from Third Future shows he made about $80,000 last year as a consultant for the company he founded.
Yeah, so that's a good point of clarification too, because we hear millions of dollars per school and you think, is that all going to him? That's not all going to him. It's the nonprofit that the money goes to. And the nonprofit in return, when they go into one of these schools, they don't just go in and go, you know, here, let's do some window dressing, let's fix up a few things. They will replace teachers, bring in their own teachers, replace curriculum, bring in their own curriculum, and it can be a very different setup from what that school was doing before.
It's interesting. So we went up to Wichita Falls. We visited Hershey Middle School. It had been a long time since I had been in middle school. I know it's longer for you guys.
By a couple of years.
Years. Yeah. But it was unlike any middle school I had been in before in terms of the curriculum. So a couple of structural things that have changed, right? So they've extended the school day and the school year. Only 1 in 5 of the teachers who were at Hershey last year are at Hershey this year.
Wow.
So they brought in almost all their own staff.
Third Future hired their own staff and brought some of the local teachers back.
Brought 20% of the local teachers back. And they pay their staff. Third Future does very well. So the superintendent in Wichita Falls told us that they start teachers out at about $50,000 a year. Teachers from Third Future at Hershey make $100,000 a year, he said. Mm. But those are the changes that students may not notice. Mm-hmm. The things that the kids in the classrooms noticed, and that what struck me is for a middle school, it was almost entirely silent, the entire campus. You walk through, students are, they get Third Futures curriculum, they call it differentiated instruction. They have, the teacher will speak a little bit, lecture from the start of the class, then students will have a worksheet to work on. Depending on how they do on that worksheet, they will leave the classroom and go to what used to be the library, because there is no library in the school anymore, and work on a more advanced worksheet. Students who don't perform as well on the first worksheet then get reinstructed on the material again.
And it's all, and we've talked about some big changes here in Texas with these schools that have gone to an all, you know, this big AI model and all this. I think an important distinction with this one is it's all pen and paper. You got a lot of worksheets, and it sounds like you're kind of teaching, I mean, you know, as so many people talk about here, teaching to a test.
And critics will say that's what they're doing, is teaching to the test. Other folks will say, well, that's what the schools are doing anyway.
Right.
They're just doing it better, is what their supporters say. Third Future, they were up here in North Texas because they're taking over two schools in Everman ISD. And the way they described it is they think that their method of teaching, not only the kids learn better, but they also build up more stamina for when it's time to sit down and take the STAR test, because they're used to sitting in silence doing long kind of worksheets.
Wait, how about class transitions? Still quiet there in the middle school?
One of the interesting things about this is students are walked in the middle school in a single file, silent line by their teacher from class to class.
Anybody who's been in a middle school knows that that is just, that's almost weird. You don't see that in a regular middle school or junior high. And you know, what if I am a kid at this school and I want to, you know, play in the band?
After school. There are no in-school extracurriculars.
Okay, no in-school extracurriculars. What if I want to go to lunch? This struck
this
me.
This is great. This is the best line in the story here.
So this was something that first actually interested me in the story in Wichita Falls. In the cafeteria, in order to get your lunch, you have to answer a multiplication question. If you answer the multiplication question wrong, you have to go to the back of the line.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And that forced the school to put out a statement, because parents were upset about this.
But they're hearing their kids. Lunch is not withheld, you said, though.
No, that's, and so the school had to put out a statement saying every kid is going to eat. They just have to answer a multiplication question right.
Imagine having to get math right to eat, Jason.
Right. And, you know, clearly he couldn't be in the school for as much as he talks over here. As much as Wheeler talks. I mean, this is my first question on the podcast so far.
But I was good at math.
You were?
Yeah.
That's surprising.
Yeah. Is that surprising?
Just knowing you. And you know. But you know what's interesting? Considering all that and considering the... How long has this been going on in Wichita Falls?
This is their first full year doing it in Wichita Falls in their one middle school. They liked it so much, they're doing two elementary schools next year.
So they're a semester and a half in right now in Wichita Falls. And in the story, you asked the superintendent there, Donnie Lee, why they outsource their schools. This is interesting what he said.
How much of this was driven by the threat of TEA takeover?
Majority of it. We knew that we were in big trouble as I came in. I mean, the TEA was calling me my first week on the job and saying, this is a 5-alarm fire and you better find a way to put it out.
So Donnie Lee there, the Wichita Falls superintendent, says this was all about pressure from the state. If he can't fix these schools, he's newer to the district, but if he can't fix these schools, then the state's gonna take him over.
He's going to be out of
his job, everything.
And he says the TEA was very clear. You've got to do something.
Yeah.
This is one of the options.
But what's interesting here is that the critics do call this privatization by another name. And after your reporting, after you saw this, and after you talked to all involved here, is that fair? Is this privatization of public schools?
It is definitely taking public education dollars away from ISDs and sending them to a third party.
I was going to ask you, how does the money work? So, you know, when we start talking about an expense that's this great, you know, where you're talking about $375,000 a month for each school that enters this, and, you know, this is for multiple years that you're signing these contracts, people would go, well, how does the district have the money for that? It's using district money, but also state money.
Yeah, so the way math works out, and it's an average of 375. There's
some math.
So I got my calculator ready.
Let's see if Wheeler can do it.
Let's see if you get lunch today.
Wichita Falls sends to Third Future Schools 100% of the per pupil allotment it gets from the state for every pupil at Hershey Middle School.
Okay, so that's what they'd be spending anyway.
Right, that's the money they would get per pupil at Hershey. And then, you know, the added benefit, not only do they get a 2-year reprieve from state takeover, but the TEA kicks in some extra money to the district to help pay for this third-party operator. Those are called 1882 funds after SB 1882, which set up this whole scheme. That money goes almost entirely to the third party operator, in this case Third Future as well.
Did you hear from anyone when you were discussing all of this? I mean, you're talking about the state kicking in all this additional money. You're talking about this third party vendor that, you know, pays its teachers double what the district is able to pay them. Did you hear from anybody who said, well, if the state's going to commit all of this money, why shouldn't we just commit it all in the very beginning for all of the schools and see if that actually, you know, brings schools up? Like, why do we wait until we've got a crisis and then farm it out to private industry? Why don't we just publicly do this?
I think that's a strong argument that the teachers' associations are making and saying, look, if you're going to be putting this money in, put it in and let the districts do it. The district, I mean, in Wichita Falls, the superintendent, you just heard from him, he's been very clear. He's like, this is what we got to do. Like, this is the situation that we're in. These are the circumstances we are. One other thing about the money that I think gets to your question is the amount that they get, so the per pupil funding plus the extra funds from the TEA, is about comparable to what a charter school would get for that amount of students. Mm-hmm. So it kind of trues up the public district allotment to what the charter school allotment would be for this turnaround operator to then come.
Who's paying for the upkeep of the school, the taking the trash out, bringing chocolate milk in, stuff like that?
Facilities is still the district's responsibility. They also, in Wichita Falls, run the buses. They pay for the school nurse, and Third Future kicks back a little bit of that money to them as well.
So what are parents saying, Cole? Could you talk to parents whose children are directly affected by this?
Kind of a wide range.
Really?
From parents that we talked to in Wichita Falls. One woman who we interviewed in our piece is very much in favor of this. Mm-hmm. She said that she started out with a lot of questions. She had never heard of anything like this before. I hadn't either.
Right.
And she was very curious what was going to happen. She says that it has turned around her kid's education entirely. She's like, he is learning. And I asked her, you know, he's sitting in silence. He's, you know, filling out worksheets. He's not talking to classmates in the hallway.
And he likes that, she said.
And she says he likes that. And she says she likes it too. She says, I didn't send him to school to make friends. I didn't send him to school to socialize. I sent him to school to learn. Hmm. Other parents we talked to have some more reservations about it.
You know, well, it's like, interesting.
Like what, though? What reservations do they have about it?
I think their reservations based on the parents we talked to, both the ones who are in Wichita Falls right now, yeah, who have students in the school district, and also prospective parents, is this is just so different from what students are used to, that what might work for the mom and the kid that we interviewed in the piece who say this is great for me, this
sure
allowed my
structure
kid to concentrate, yeah, this is structured in this way, they're saying it's not working for their kid. It's they don't fit into this model,
yeah,
that is brought on by Third
and
Future
a lot of
schools.
People would argue though that the schools are a time to socialize and to grow that muscle as well though.
That's where I learned.
Is that where you learned?
Yeah.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, it does explain a lot.
No, but that's...
Gosh, I feel sorry for your teachers. You know that, Wheeler? I really do.
Yeah, I was a handful.
How awful were you in ISS, school suspension?
I wasn't really ISS, but I was... I did.
How far it goes back for him?
I
predates
visited,
ISS.
No, I didn't go that far, but I did visit with the principal on a number of occasions.
Some nice chats. It's interesting you mentioned discipline, though, because that's one of the things that the principal, the superintendent in Wichita Falls says is a benefit of Third Future is... They can adopt different discipline policies than the district itself.
It circumvents what is normal. It circumvents the limits that you normally have as a district.
Right, exactly. I mean, they still have to abide by state law, obviously, but they can essentially take this campus on an island and make changes that have much stricter discipline policies.
So is it easier to suspend a Jason Whiteley or expel him if he becomes a problem?
It's easier. Well, Third Future would say that they don't tolerate any kind of discipline issues in the classroom because there's to be no distraction for kids learning. So if you misbehave, they will bring you outside the classroom. They have the money to live stream each of their classes. So they say you don't get out of learning. You go to a separate kind of reset center where you sit down and watch on Zoom what your classmates are doing without the ability to distract them.
You're kind of in solitary at that point.
And still learning at that point, is what they say. So you don't have the opportunity to fall behind.
I think what's interesting is the parent that you talked about first, the one who was a convert, mm-hmm, who said, you know, at first I was skeptical and boy, I came around. She said, I don't think it's going to work for all kids, but normal school doesn't either. I do think it's important here to say that, you know, when you look at accountability grades for all Texas schools, the vast majority of them are meeting those accountability standards. You know, it's a question as to what exact grade they're getting, but the vast majority of them are meeting it. So a lot of schools are getting it.
Woo!
Almost knocked that beer off.
Last one for you. Cut off.
Call an Uber for Wheeler.
Did you see that catch, though?
For our listener who didn't see that, he almost just knocked his beer over. That's how animated he is on this podcast.
And my point there was, I forgot what my point was.
Can we get
a
nap, please?
I really did make a good catch there.
You're saying
where
that
were you going with this?
Most schools mate their accountability scores.
Right.
This is a select few that are failing and failing habitually.
Yeah, but my point here, though, is that, okay, so let's say we bring in this outside company. They come in, they do an amazing job, they pay these teachers well, they get these students in line, and we've got great outcomes. They've had some really successful outcomes, right?
Yep, absolutely. So in Mendez Middle and Austin ISD, they took the district from an F to a B.
This third future schools
did that. They had good luck in Midland ISD as well. So they've had schools that they have brought, as they promised, from an F to a D to B. But this, not all of them. And the issue is exactly what you were bringing up, Wheeler, is this is a 3-year turnaround contract.
Right.
It's not meant to be how the school is run forever.
Yeah. So you're going to head to Ector with this, aren't you?
Exactly. So what happens when Third Future's contract, after 3 years, they got you from an F to a B or an A?
Things are looking good.
And they say, great, thank you so much. Contract's over. We're on to the next school district. And they leave. Well, I asked the superintendent in Wichita Falls this question. He said, well, we'd love to keep some of their teachers, but they're going to have to half their salary. And so he's like, realistically, a lot of those teachers are going to go with Third Future somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to keep some of these curriculum changes, but we don't have the bandwidth to implement them in the same way that Third Future does. We'd love to keep the discipline policies, but we don't have the technology to Zoom every single classroom so students can, you know, be sent out of class and still have to learn. So in one school in Odessa, Ector Collegiate Prep, Third Future brought it from an F to a B, contract ended, next year went down to a D again, another failing grade.
So it was back to normal, essentially.
It was back to the baseline.
And that takes us back to that argument that some people are making that say, why not just put the resources publicly every year into these schools instead of bringing in and, you know,
just juicing it once.
I don't want to say enriching an outside company, but it is a lot of money that you're paying a private company. And instead of doing that, why not just commit the public dollars and do it from here on?
That's definitely one of the criticisms of this is why are you carving out this program to bring a third party operator in if you don't support the district to do the same thing? Now, the districts would say, we've tried everything we can with the resources that we have, and we've tried to bring in the best teachers to these schools. We've tried to bring in curriculum coaches into these schools, and it hasn't worked.
You mentioned the teachers' associations a moment ago, and Donnie Lee, we just heard from him earlier in the podcast here. He's the Wichita Falls superintendent. You had one soundbite that did not air in your broadcast stories on WFAA, and this is with the American Federation of Teachers and the president in Texas, Zef Capo, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Capo? And he was just blasting these school districts for going down this route. Is that a fair characterization of where he is?
And he's bringing up the same point that I think Wheeler's bringing up, is that this is privatization, is his words. It's another avenue towards privatization of public schools.
I want you to hear what he said. Take a listen.
They'd rather be hung by their thumbnails than have to deal with the state taking over their school district. So is it like better than the alternative? Maybe, probably. It's worth a shot. You know, is it better to close the school than allow it to be taken over by the state of Texas?
So again, that was from the president of the Texas American Federation of Teachers, and he puts it out in no uncertain terms from their point of view. I also found it interesting, one of the other things that he had to say, and he says, this is either a tool to avoid the accountability system, or, and that's on the district side, or a tool for basically extracting private wealth out of the public school system on the other side, which is what we were talking about going into that soundbite from him, and that's the point that they're making.
And I think he would say it's both. It's both a way for districts to avoid state takeover and the accountability system. And he says that it's a way for third parties to take a lot of Texas education dollars.
And to go back to what you said earlier in this episode too, the albatross around so many educators and parents is this standardized testing. He made a good point too. What price do we pay for better test scores that frankly mean little to nothing? You keep talking about the worksheets that Third Future brings in. I remember during COVID, I asked my elementary principal at the time, hey, can you give us some worksheets to do during COVID? My kid's not there. Our kids aren't there right now. And she said, no, we're not going to do worksheets. We don't do worksheets. We're gonna teach kids things. Worksheets, you can put on the Xerox machine and work those out. How effective are these, though? In when you look at the entire spectrum here, from the discipline, from not talking, from missing multiplication questions and not getting your food or going to the back of the line, and then the worksheets on top of that, any idea how effective those actually are?
Well, that's the $10 million question, right, Jason? Is if you're saying, okay, performance on the STAR test doesn't equal learning, then how do you measure learning?
Right.
Right? That's the tough question. Now, if you're looking at the performance on the test, in Wichita Falls, for example, at Hershey Middle, they do mid-year kind of evaluations, and they say their students there have shown 1.4 years of growth in just 5 months. So their goal...
That's an impressive stat.
But the district says that or Third Future says that?
Both, and they point to standardized tests that the students took.
Well, and
took.
To be clear, the district wouldn't gain anything by fighting Third Future either, because they kind of need them to be there to prevent the state coming in.
Right, exactly. So they say...
I mean, I'm not saying they're doing that. I'm saying that they wouldn't gain
that's
anything.
That's what it sounds like you're saying, Jason. That's what it sounds like, but go ahead.
But they say it's working, and that's why they've decided... For the two elementary schools that feed that middle school, they'd like to try it next year too.
Are there equity concerns at all in some of these schools? That's what we hear a lot, especially with the voucher debate.
So,
is it some of these schools, the lower performing are often minority districts, and they're either getting more in this case or getting less in the usual cases?
That's one of the things that I think is the interesting follow-up in the long tail to this story, as we call it. So I was in Everman a couple weeks ago when they were doing a parent meeting talking about what the changes they had to expect this coming year as they give two schools over to Third Future. And they addressed two points, special ed and English language learners, ESL. And special, I mean, the district, Third Future, are still bound by all state and federal laws on these two both special ed and English language learners. Third Future says, we will accommodate all of your IEPs, we'll accommodate all of the things that your student has.
They have to by law.
They have to by law.
Right.
They say they find that actually their students who are on IEPs outperform the standard for their peers. And they say they do that mostly in the same setting with the same tools as the students without those.
And for clarification, IEPs are things anywhere from individual education
plans,
anyone from dyslexia to severe disabilities would have those.
Right, exactly. And Third Future's program is certainly set up to address maybe some of the less impactful.
Sure.
I mean, some of the more impactful IEPs are going to be a lot more difficult for anyone, including the school districts, to address, and a lot more expensive as well.
Wow.
Let's talk about Third Future and how much money they've made off this to date. So you had in the story that they made $13.5 million in
revenue.
Are
we doing math again, Jason?
Here we are.
We're going back. This is higher math.
Look,
now.
This is a podcast about schools. So
it's a highbrow podcast.
We're back to classroom.
Highbrow, huh?
We'll see.
Fancy.
So $13.5 million in revenue from their Texas contracts just in July through December last year.
Correct.
That's a big chunk of money.
And
they're expecting that to go on steroids.
Yes. So they have five or six schools right now across Texas. They're expecting to add 10 or 12 more probably by the time this podcast comes out. And it's everywhere from Texarkana to San Antonio, Wichita Falls to Austin and outside of Houston.
Is anyone across the state. Is anyone concerned that the Third Future is the only one getting a bite at this apple here, that there might not be other companies out there? I can't imagine in a country as big as this, there's not another company in another state somewhere that could provide similar things here.
Like I said, they're in some of these contracts, when districts look for third parties to come in, Third Future are the only ones who apply. Now, that is not to say that someone's going to see the Olitics podcast and say, wait a second, I've got some expertise in this area. I can do this.
We could be the math teacher.
I'm surprised somebody hasn't already done that.
Yeah. No, that's just fascinating to me that, for as big as this country is, there's nobody else out there supplying it.
And it's starting small, right? I mean, this is, and the reason it's happening now is because accountability scores paused during the pandemic.
Right.
So now we are four
years out.
At this point where districts have three or four Fs,
okay,
where they had a break for 2020 and 2021 in some cases.
That's why we're starting to see more schools pile up into the queue here and like, well, that might be what we have to do.
That's what both independent consultants and experts we interviewed and Third Future themselves say.
So that could be a windfall.
Likely to grow, especially as more districts explore this option.
We call that math, Wheeler.
Yes.
We call that math. That's math. That's the bottom line. There's a lot of black in that account there, no red in there. So we talked about the critics. We talked about the supporters of this, even parents. But you also talked to another former superintendent, the successor and predecessor of Mike Miles, Michael Hinojosa. And you asked him what he thought about this. Let's listen to what he said.
It's an interesting experiment. But, you know, it's got to stand the test of time. It can't just have short-term victories and short-term gain for long-term pain. That's not a good formula for anybody.
So, again, that's former Dallas Independent School District Superintendent Michael Hinojosa, who is now an educational consultant. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of looking at this, you know, skeptically, but also maybe.
Well, with some expertise as well, right? And he's looking at this and saying, these districts, he told me, you know, they have what they've tried is not working. They need to try something else. They've got the TEA breathing down their neck. This is something to try. But what he says is important, as you heard him, is like, what happens after Third Future leaves? What happens in the long term with these schools? Does this just put out the fire, or does this solve the problem that started the fire?
Yeah, we don't know that yet, right? It sounds a lot like the question that we see with these state takeovers of schools as well. Like Houston, I mean, you know, to give the state some credit here, and I know some people are not going to want to hear this in Houston because they haven't enjoyed it.
Go ahead.
But, you know, since they took over HISD in 2023, they've had big improvements in test scores. Last school year, no F-rated campuses, down from 56 underperforming campuses before the intervention. So, you know, on paper anyway, you look at that and go, whoa. But you also realize that there's no local control. People have no say, you know, in choosing their board and therefore a superintendent at the schools where their kids go. And maybe they don't even send their kids to those schools anymore. And so, you know, the question is, I think the state is staying in HISD in the takeover until 2027 sometime. What happens when they leave? That, you know, these big interventions, you know, you come in, whether it's the state or a private company, you pour all these resources and all this attention in. What is the result when it
What's
all
the
leaves?
Exit strategy, right? Well, how do you figure out how to change what is essentially, you know, you're supercharging the schools for a certain amount of time, at least with Third Future, with state intervention, you're bringing a lot of outside expertise into it. What happens when then you say, okay, you've got this, and, you know, the students move along, right? Yeah. They're graduating, they're moving up in age groups. You get different groups of students continuing to come in, and then you kind of change what you've been doing that's been working.
I wonder if Wichita Falls figures this out, though, because, you know, it's one thing when you're having to pay Third Future and, you know, you're using their curriculum and their system. It's another thing when you can pay close attention while they're there. And yeah, you can't pay your teachers as much as they've been paying them. But when they leave, you could still mimic a lot of what they do. And they've sort of hinted that that's what they're looking at. Like, maybe we can start to adopt some of these things that they've put in place.
They're saying we want to learn over the next 3 years as well. And what works for Third Future that we might be able to emulate, to copy.
Is the exit strategy on Third Future or on these districts, do you think?
That's a tough question. I think that you might get different answers on it. From my perspective, the district is the one that's made this contract, and the district is the one that is looking on the long term and is responsible for educating students in that area. And so if the district is making this deal and knowing that it has an end date, or in Wichita Falls they have a taper off kind of aspect of all of this, what happens after that is back on the district's shoulders and what the responsibility is, right? They have that. They're the ones who the buck stops with when it comes to educating the kids in their area.
That's who people are paying taxes to. What do you think the message to taxpayers is here? Because no one wants failing schools, because that, you know, companies don't go to cities where there are failing schools.
Kids maybe aren't learning too,
kids,
right?
I mean, learning.
That's
the
top
line
in all this.
A lot of issues. Yeah. What do you think the message to taxpayers is here?
It's interesting. So I asked the Everman ISD superintendent this. She said, you know, we're confident our kids can do this. We're confident our kids can be B and A, and I said, students in accountability scores. And I said, okay, well then why can't you get them there, right? Like, what does that
question,
say?
Right.
What does that say about your district and its education there? I think the message to taxpayers is something is not working in the district as it is right now, so much so that a third party is having to come in to try to fix it. And a lot of money is going to that third party.
Yeah, when you say something's not working, you know, so many parents have said that, teachers, administrators, politicians, and they've said it for a long time here in Texas.
And what's interesting is, too, that, you know, Everman and Wichita Falls, these are small districts. When you look at Houston and Dallas, these massive districts with a handful of you know, problem schools.
Yeah. There's a lot. It's interesting because some of the school districts we looked at who were in years three or four here in North Texas with failing schools and thus may be looking externally for one of these partners for Third Future to come in. The larger districts have more tools in their tool belt because they can do, as we saw in Arlington just a few weeks ago, they can close a school and kind of dilute the students out to other campuses and other schools.
Yeah, you get to four failing years and you go, you know, this campus is old, we need to restructure and rezone and, you know, send these kids to other places.
It's not a bad strategy.
It's not a bad strategy. It's not available to a small school district that has two middle schools.
Nowhere to go.
Right, you don't have anywhere to send students.
Well, and in the backdrop of all of this, there's a lot of pressure on all of these schools anyway right now, additional pressure, we should say, because we now have private school vouchers that the state has approved.
I haven't heard about those.
You've been under a rock, Ben. So you know, we know that these vouchers have been approved. This, you know, program is starting up. It will possibly only grow from here. And that is essentially competition for public schools. You know, big advocates of public schools have said that that, you know, undermines public education and could pull students and dollars away from public schools. Well, they've got to be looking over their shoulder right now, too, and going, you know, we can't afford a takeover. We can't afford the look of that. We do need to improve the scores here. Let's do what the state's telling us to, that we've got to fix something and just go with this third party.
And that's one of the things that, that the Wichita Falls guy, superintendent, said was, you know, if we're playing in this competitive landscape, which some people, by the way, say is the way it should be, right? As if, you know, you should be able to bring your child to the school that is going to educate them the best. And clearly Hershey Middle was not doing that if it was getting F's and D's for years before this. So if you should be in a place where you can bring your child to a school that's educating it the best, the superintendent of Wichita Falls says we need to do what we have to do to make sure that that's one of our campuses. I mean, he says, if you can't beat them, join them.
You mentioned Hershey several times in here, and you also noted that they changed the name of this school. Did they change the name when Third Future took over?
No,
it was before that?
The name change was also a building change at the time.
Okay.
So it was a local redistricting, phasing out buildings, a kind of thing that we've seen so many school consolidations that districts are doing across. And it doesn't change the TEA rating.
Right.
So
a
name change the TEA sees through and says, okay, you can't just change the.
It's another good corporate
facade.
Move, though. You know, let's either distribute
Rebranding.
The problems. Yes, you know. Send them out or rebrand the issue. Here's the last question I had for you, Cole. What do you think is the biggest unanswered question here as we go forward? Because Third Future is still taking the test about whether this is going to work or not across the board.
That is the biggest unanswered question. Does this work? Is it sustainable? Is it something that districts can continue on? Or in 5 years, do they have to hire Third Future back again? The Wichita Falls super, I ask because, you know, one might say, well, the incentive for Third Future is not to show success then and stay in your school district long term and take over this school for a long time. Wichita Falls superintendent says then we wouldn't have hired them in the first place if they can't turn it around. But after the turnaround is over, does it last?
I think another big question to keep an eye on is, does this turn into a cottage industry? Because right now you have, you know, almost a monopoly with Third Future schools. I mean, they're out there, everybody knows of them, and they're in a lot of these places. There's a lot of money to be made here, and I just can't imagine that other, you know, companies are going to sit on the sidelines and not jump all over this. But, you know, if you think that this is just a somewhere else thing, I'll close with this. Cole, you said that currently Third Future Schools, again, they're looking to maybe triple the number of schools that they run next year.
Yep.
Currently, they're already in Jasper, Midland, Manor, Austin, Wichita Falls. And as we record this, they have also gotten agreements, or you know, districts that are considering them, in Everman, San Antonio, Killeen, Spring, Hempstead, Midland, and Texarkana. That's all over the state.
You put it on a map, and it's all four corners of the state of Texas. Mm.
It's fascinating. Wow. There's just so many layers to this. I know that there will have to be follow-ups, not to give you a lot more work to do.
But thank you. Yeah. Go back. Well, I'll be back on the podcast and let you know what I find out.
There's definitely going to be follow-ups, just because, I mean, obviously something is working with what they're doing. It's just
in
a question.
In most cases, it is. Let's make sure we qualify.
That's why I said something.
Yeah.
There's something there if you're able to, you know, really lift these scores. The questions remain, though.
Can you sustain that?
Sure. Can you keep that going? And can it be afforded on a grand scale as more and more schools feel the pressure to do this?
And what is the impact on the students in the meantime? If the star scores go up, or is the learning going up?
And you wonder, too, is it, you know, long-term the right thing for students? We keep hearing about socialization and, you know, how we've lost a lot of that in our culture because kids are down in phones or on computers or VR headsets or whatever. And if you're not able to socialize at school or maybe do those extracurriculars, you know, that formation of who you are, does that impact that as well? It'd be interesting to see if somebody studies that over time.
All questions that parents and schools are asking right now.
We'll have to study it on the podcast here.
Yeah.
We should go into this business, man. I mean, this is a tremendous
amount. That's what I told you when we were setting this up with Cole. I was like, forget the podcast, man. We need to create an education company.
And you got to get approved by the TEA, and then districts can contract.
I'll handle the math. I'll handle the math.
You're in charge of the math.
Lightly do the talking.
Yeah, right. No, I can't get a word in this podcast here. Yeah, I mean, Wheeler's been talking.
I thought you meant Cole talked too much.
Thanks for letting me be an audience member here today, Wheeler. I appreciate you having me today. So Cole's work can be seen right now at WFAA.com. Fascinating stuff. Just search Third Future Schools and WFAA, and you can find all of his stories there.
Or even Cole Sullivan.
Search Cole. There's only one, right?
There's only one. Well, there are a couple of professional football players. You won't confuse me with any of them.
That's great.
Oh, geez.
Cole, this is great stuff. And thanks to everybody for listening and for watching, and probably more to come on this. But for now, we have to get out of here so that we can have a jackfruit barbecue sandwich.
And we're glad to say that Wheeler's beer survived the rest of this podcast.
It did. It's kind of amazing that it did. Our thanks again to Community Beer here in Dallas for hosting us once again. It is one of our go-to spots.
Absolutely.